Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the channel. My name is Jacob Restituto. I'm a musician from Northport, New York, and today we have the absolute pleasure of having DJ Swivel here on the channel. Really appreciate you taking the time, man, out of your busy schedule. I know you got a lot going on, so thank you so much for taking the time.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to join today.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So if you're not familiar with DJ Swivel and his discography and what he's worked on, if you listen to general radio, you've heard something that he's worked on, between Jay-Z to Beyonce to Britney Spears to the Chainsmokers to a whole bunch of other people and artists. He has quite the extensive discography, so you've definitely heard some of the stuff, including BTS, actually, more recently, stuff that he's worked on, has songwriting credits on, engineered and produced. So appreciate you taking the time, man. Thank you.
Yeah, of course, glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to chatting. So if people aren't super familiar with you and what you've been into, could you just give a little backstory?
Yeah, sure. So I've been, doing, music a lot of my life, but professionally since 2006. I moved to New York in sort of the August 2005 and took a few months to find that, that first, real internship where I felt like I could sort of move forward. And that was in January 2006. And I kind of view that as the beginning of my professional career. And I started with an internship with a guy named Duro, who is co-founder of Desert Storm Records, DJ Clue, and an amazing mix engineer and producer. He produced Heartbreaker for Mariah Carey and So Into You for Fabolous Tamia, and he signed Fabolous. So it was a great space for me to learn, because he was both an incredibly smart and business savvy person, and he sort of instilled some of those qualities in what I do, which has been incredibly helpful. But at the same time, also a very creative person and understands music and how to make music and create it, and great A&R. So it was a perfect person to learn under. And I interned for him for a few years. And within the first year, I became Fabolous's engineer. So I would sort of juggle interning for him during the day and assisting him as his mixing and stuff. And then at night, taking over as the engineer, he would go home to his family, and I'd kind of be in control of the studio and work with Fabolous all night until the sun came up, and then I'd go sleep for 4 hours and do it again. So that was kind of how I got started and sort of cut my teeth. And then a few years after doing two albums and probably three mixtapes with Fabolous and going on tour with him and all of that as his engineer, and even getting to co-mix with Duro Loso's Way, which was sort of a highlight of that moment. Duro let me co-mix Loso's Way for Fab. I got this call through a friend who I met through Fabolous, Omar Grant, who was asking me if I could fill in for Beyonce's engineer for a few days. And I said, of course, and I showed up, and I ended up spending, 4 or 5 days with her. We did a bunch of music, and then just as her engineer, and then she went on vacation for 6 weeks, and I thought, okay, I was just to fill in for that week, I'm not going to hear back. And then she came back 6 weeks later, it reached out to me and said, hey, we want you to do the whole album with us. So that was great, and I became her engineer and worked with her for a couple of years, traveled the world, went to Australia and UK. Wow. And all over the place, Miami, LA. Got to work on some really great stuff with her, and then sort of moved on from that and felt like, I've always been somebody who, I set goals, I achieve goals, and then I want to set new goals. I've never been content staying in one place.
Sure.
It's not what I do. A lot of people like doing that. There's a lot of mixers who that's what they do. They wake up, they mix, and that's all they care about. And that's great. But for me, I always wanted to do what's the next thing. So after engineering for her, I thought, I've climbed the top of the mountain for recording. Who else am I going to work with that's going to compare to Beyonce? Mm. And so then I started refocusing my career on mixing and mixing solely. And I did mix for Beyonce, but I was primarily the recording engineer who did some mixing. I said, let me focus on just mixing. And so it took a few years to sort of build that stuff up. And then one day I got a call from the manager, or an email rather, from the manager of the Chainsmokers. And this was prior to them having really any hits, but he said, hey, this is a new group. They had a song, Selfie, that had come out that was, some of us know, it was what it was, but it did well. Sure. So I said, okay, let me meet the guys. And I had them meet me up at Jungle City Studios. I was working there.
Is this New York or LA at the time?
I was in New York. Sorry, this
Still,
is all
yeah.
in New York. My whole beginning of my career was in New York City. And then they came up and we hit it off and just great guys and similar age. And we just got along really well. And it felt like, just felt like my friends, you know, on that day. And so Drew gave me a bunch of the music that they were working on. And I was traveling to LA, I think for the Grammys or something like that. And I said, on the flight to LA, I'm going to listen to everything. I'm going to give you notes on. There was no business. It was just like, let me try to help you guys out, help refine the sound. Let me just take notes on all the things that I think could be improved on these songs. And so I did. And they gave me one song to mix, and it was called Good Intentions off the Roses EP. And then the next song they sent me was Don't Let Me Down. And we ended up winning a Grammy for that about a year later. But that was sort of the next song. And by that time, when they sent me Don't Let Me Down, I had moved from New York to LA. So they were still in New York. I was in LA. They sent me the song. Drew came out and we worked on the song together.
This is
And
as
then,
a mix engineer, or
yeah, that was as a mix engineer. I started with them as a mix engineer, like just refining the sound. But also, they gave me a lot of freedom to contribute. So, for example, on Don't Let Me Down, like the bass and the kick were fighting in the original version. I said, well, let's just replace the kick drum. It's not really the right kick for the song. Let's replace it. And so we would do little things. It'd be, you know, more direction of production. So, you know, call it co-production or whatever. I don't think I got a co-production credit on that. But,
Sure.
you know, that was our you know, dipping our toes in and really just beginning to work together and find that sort of creative chemistry. And that song worked out really well. And then the next song they gave me was Closer. And that one I did co-produce and you know, did all the vocal production, cut Drew, cut Halsey, mixed it, worked on the arrangement, changed sounds and whatever. And that song was just so big that sort of kicked off a whole new phase of my career. I kind of view like those two songs, Don't Let Me Down and Closer, as like that was the beginning of where the next phase of my career
Very
started.
interesting.
And then, you know, was locked in with them for that whole like collage EP, the Roses EP, and then eventually Memory, their first album that had we did something just like this in Paris and all these great records. And then through that I met BTS because they had produced a song for BTS that I mixed called Best of Me. And through that connection I started just talking with the A&R at Big Hit, their label at the time, still their label, though name has changed. And you know, this was before they were known in America. They were trying to break into the rest of the world market. They were known in Korea, but not really in America yet. And so I sent them a few songs and they loved them. And one of those songs was Euphoria, which became a big single for them, still one of their most popular songs. And I wrote and produced that with a songwriter I discovered, Candace Sosa. And yeah, and then they just took off and it was like wildfire. It was like Beatlemania around them. And I continued to write with them. And I ended up writing, I think, 9 or 10 songs for them. And that was amazing. And then that sort of kicked off another phase of my career with songwriting and things like that. So I've always sort of, everything's always been an evolution. And throughout this time, I had also begun doing more and more on the business side of things. So I started a publishing company. I got into tech and I started, you know, did a tech startup. And now I do a lot of venture capital investing and things like that. So my career has really had an evolution all the way through. And now I kind of just view myself, you know, now I make, you know, plugins as well. So I have a software business making music plugins. So, you know, I've always been somebody who just looks at what's next and setting new goals and then trying to go after them and achieve them. So, sorry, that's my long-winded
No,
version.
it's a phenomenal. I appreciate that because it brings up a lot of great talking points. So you have had quite the so you, just to recap it, essentially, you started in the kind of 05, 06 ish area, and then now to that kind of, that story kind of ends around where, like, the current place now, but also 2019, 2020, 21 area, right? To
Well,
current.
I moved to LA and I sort of view the move from New York to LA as that was the shift in my career. So I moved to LA in 2015,
Okay.
moved to New York in 2005. So I spent a decade in New York and, capped that off with, the work that I did with Beyonce and then sort of just beginning my work with the Chainsmokers in New York and then continuing in LA.
Yeah.
So that was the transition from being an engineer to a mixer and a producer and then eventually a songwriter.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, a couple of questions based on this, and I think it'll be some great talking points. I'd love to hear, even taking it back all the way to the beginning to Duro, you move from Toronto to New York. How
Well,
did
I moved
you?
from Toronto to Florida. I
Okay.
did a year of school at Full Sail and then I moved to New York. So
Oh,
it wasn't
okay.
even, it was 11 months I did in Florida and then I moved to New York.
Is that how long the program was, or did you not finish the program?
No, the program was 12 months, but I had done a year of college prior, and so I had transfer credit that I could, so I was able to skip a month. Yeah.
Very cool. So is that was actually, I guess, answering my question to some degree. Is like, so I guess from Full Sail, you got that internship through with Duro, or how did that go about?
Yeah, well, actually, yeah, Full Sail had sort of notified me of the possibility of it. The way I got the internship, I've told this story a bunch, but I really had to fight for it. I went in and actually, I didn't even get an interview. I got a courtesy, I sent a resume in and I got a courtesy email from his current assistant saying, we love your resume. We thought you were great. However, you mentioned you were a DJ on your resume, and that's where my name came from. I was a DJ in Toronto, I was playing nightclubs and stuff like that. And they said, yeah, you mentioned you're a DJ on your resume, and we've had DJs leak music before. It's not really a good look if you're looking for a studio
Very
job.
interesting.
And so it was a courtesy email saying, we thought your resume was great, but unfortunately we can't hire you. Our suggestion would be remove DJ from your resume if you're looking for other jobs like this. And I was so adamant, like first of all, I'm a Canadian. I've moved to New York. I'm on a temporary visa. The only way I get to stay and fulfill the career that I envisioned is to have somebody meaningful open up enough doors and opportunities for me to have the ability to get a long-term visa. It's actually a difficult thing to do. Keep in mind, this was before Drake was a thing. So the Toronto recording industry was like not a thing. Now it is because Drake is sort of such a enormous artist that you have all these new producers and songwriters and artists and other people coming up under him. Not even necessarily just signed, just the fact that he's from Toronto and doing it at such a high level, it inspires the city to want to go do it. And so now there's much more of a recording music business in Toronto. Still not what LA is, but or New York, but it's meaningful. But that never existed. So there was no option for me to have the career I wanted in Toronto at the time. There might be now. And yeah, and so I basically begged for an interview from Duro to jump back to that. And I said, listen, I would never leak music. I want this more than anything in the world. Just give me a chance. Just meet me and then you decide. And they said, well, unfortunately, we've already filled the position, but I'll tell you what, why don't you come by the studio and we'll just give you a tour and just show you what we do and
Wow.
what. So I was like,
Which is still very cool on their behalf as well,
yeah, I mean, I felt a little defeated, but I really
Sure.
wasn't taking no
Sure.
for an answer. I was very confident in my emails. I wasn't,
Ah,
I felt disappointed, but they didn't see that.
oh,
So they let me come in to just tour the studio. And that tour eventually, what it seemed like turned into an interview. I sat in the room with Duro and he started asking me questions and he let me ask him questions and became a bit of an interview. And then I left and that was in, I think, November of 2005. And then about a month later, a couple weeks later, around my birthday, which is December 14th. So it was probably around December, middle of December somewhere. I get a call saying, all right, we're going to have you come in. So you start January 2nd. And I had flown back to Toronto for the holidays. And so I booked an earlier ticket home. And normally I would come home like the 5th of January, something like that. So booked an earlier ticket home and landed and went straight to work,
100%, man. I think that's a great testament to what it takes in the music industry. I think that so many musicians, I'm sure you get this too at some point, but like so many people, like, oh, they hear that you're a musician or an artist or work in the music industry, right? And they're like, Oh man, I'd love to be an artist. I'd love to be a musician. I'm considering it. And I'm like, you know, if you're considering it, like, I don't know if you're cut out for it, because there's a lot of rejection. It's a stinking hard industry. And like,
Really hard.
to some degree, like the way you're speaking and the way I definitely relate to is the fact that like there was no other option. It's like, this is what I have to do, like, because this is who I am. And like, for a while I was making no money, and I give my wife a lot of credit because like we were like it was tough on my, like, she's a nurse, so she always had a stable job. So like for me to make no money while she's making a really serious income was really hard on the relationship for a while, you know? And
Oh, I believe it.
I give her a lot of credit. And but she was always like, you know, I would always say like, look, if we can't eat tomorrow, like I'll go get another job, like I'll work at Starbucks or whatever, but like I don't have a plan B, like this has to work, you know? And to some degree, the way you're speaking is like there was no other, whether it be with Duro or somebody else, like you were like, I'm gonna make this work, and it ended up being with Duro.
Well, I
But
only had 1 year. So when you graduate, if you're Canadian, you graduate from an American school. They certainly with Full Sail, they got me a 1 year temporary visa, like an intern visa that would allow me to go take an internship and essentially continue my studies, but in the real world, in under, in a company or under having a real job. And so that told me I had 1 year to figure things out in order to get the next visa. And I ended up, now I'm on a green card, but I ended up having one, two, three, four. My green card was my fifth visa. So that whole process was like, I mean, you don't get an O-1 visa unless you have enough accolades or credits or whatever to warrant it. So yeah, it was a challenge. It was a
Yeah, and
challenge.
it's very, very interesting that you say it like that, because to some degree, in a lot of people's success stories, you almost hear like this oppositional like timeline force, where it's like, I had to make this happen by blank, or else it didn't work. And it's like that almost that like there's no other option. This is like you're going to back home if this isn't the case. You know, it creates that like drive under you to some degree, where people are like, oh, I'll write my new song next week, like. That never gets done, and it's a
No,
very interesting
my first week with
dynamic.
Duro, I not to cut you off, my
No,
first week with Duro, I think I did 130 hours, 134 hours in the studio, which I remember my first day was a full 24-hour day. So I get to the studio and I'm there literally until 10 a.m. the next morning. And then Duro said, all right, go home and get some sleep. And then we had a block of sessions coming up with True Life and Polo the Don. And that was my first week of sessions. My first day, by the way, was Fabolous and Styles P, who did the remix to Mariah Carey, and DJ Clue was there. DJ Clue did a remix to, I think, We Belong Together or Don't Forget About Us. One of, I think it was We Belong Together. This is when like Emancipation Mimi came out, huge album. So my first day, I like meet Fabolous and Styles P. So I was like, and Clue, like I was that. You couldn't get me out of this. You couldn't drag me out of that studio. And then the next day was True Life and Polo of the Don. This new producer, Polo of the Don, who went on to become this like incredible like hit maker. And yeah, my first day with them was a 32-hour day, 30-hour day, something like that. Like straight, no sleep, no nothing. Go home, shower, sleep for 6 hours, wake up, do it again, another 32-hour day. I'd have to take little naps in the back room for 20 minutes, and then someone would bang on the door and say, hey, we need you to go get us dinner or lunch or food or whatever it was. And so but none of, I was so excited to be there. Like I didn't care. I would have done everything in that studio. I didn't
So,
need.
intern as in like whatever we need you to do, intern, or intern as
Oh
in.
yeah, whatever. I was mostly cleaning, vacuuming, fetching food, but it was a small studio. There was Duro, his assistant, and me. And so I would assist the assistant as much as needed. So if we're doing a vocal setup or whatever, like, all right, help go grab the mic and set up the mic. And, I would do little things like that. But for the most part, I was sort of in the lounge, waiting on people, scrubbing the walls, cleaning the bathroom, like, making sure the cutlery was clean and things were stocked and the garbage was taken out and all that stuff,
This is why I love these conversations, because people see all the accolades that you have, but oftentimes they don't see what it took to get there. They don't see you, the 134 hours that you worked your first week. The fact that now, granted, see, this is the caveat as well. Like, you loved it too. Like, people are always saying, like, you know, like, oh my gosh, Jacob, you work so much. I'm like, yeah, but like, I love it though. Like, there's like, this is my hobby. Like, you know,
doesn't feel like work, does it?
Exactly. So I'm fine working 18 hours because it's like, I don't want to go, you know, do whatever. Like, I love this. So like, I think that people don't see that and they're like, oh, I just want to get there, but I'm going to work 65 minutes a day. Yeah. And they're like, why isn't it working for me?
I agree. And I try to mentor as often as I can. I've, you know, supported a few students with scholarships and, you know, I try to talk to people and, you know, anybody who, you know, I'll take meetings with new producers or engineers or whatever and offer advice. And, you know, the main thing is like, if you don't find your passion in life, even not just engineering stuff, even just, you know, my nephew, for example, he's 22 years old, just graduated college. He stayed with me for the summer. He just left last week. And, you know, the whole purpose of him coming down is, all right, you graduated college. Now it's time to understand what the real world is like. And you have options. One option is you go get a job, you work for somebody, you clock in, you clock out, get your money, go enjoy your weekends. And, you know, hopefully you make enough money where you can go on vacation a couple times a year, you know, if you're lucky and whatnot. The other option is you go in it for yourself, you become an entrepreneur, and you go after it. One version is much harder than the other, much harder. But it affords you a much greater freedom. So if you want to be an entrepreneur, you got to understand what actually goes into it. You don't get to take off when you're tired. You keep going. You keep pushing until you're at a place where you've built enough of an infrastructure around what you do that you can take your vacation or whatever. Yeah. But it takes time. It's taken me, you know, now I live a little more of a relaxed life. And so, but that's taken almost 20 years to get there. I mean, 17 years I've been doing this professionally. I know I don't look that old. I'm still in my 30s, but.
Well, you know what blew my mind is the fact that like I was before I had seen what you'd worked on in the career you developed. And then I saw, I was like, oh my gosh, the guy's in his 30s. I was like, shoot, I pictured a 50-year-old guy just based on like what you've done in the past 17 years.
Yeah, but there was a lot of sacrifice. I mean,
100%.
I never felt like I worked a day in my life. Like really, I enjoy everything that I do, but it's tiring. And there's a lot of annoying things about the music business and a lot of, you know, there's a lot of shit you got to deal with.
Yeah. 100%.
But you know, I didn't really have another option. And I also sacrificed a lot. I didn't really have a lot of personal relationships. Like dating was incredibly difficult. Like I couldn't maintain anything. And, you know, you would have to like, I packed up and left New York and moved to LA because there was more opportunity in LA. And you don't have the same sense of normalcy that you have. Yes. Just, you know, grow up in a city and go take a job down the street and like, you know, have all your same high school friends. I don't have any high school friends anymore. I mean, they're like so distant. I talked to a few people, but you know, I gave up everything to focus on one priority. So,
yeah. And to some degree, people don't totally understand like how it consumes your mind to some degree in the sense that like, you know, like I mentioned, my wife is a nurse and it's just funny we're having this conversation because literally last night we were talking about the fact of like, she clocks out and that's it. You know, she works three 12-hour shifts a week and after those she clocks out and like she comes home and
turn her brain off, right?
Exactly. And as an entrepreneur, you never do that because there's always something else that you could be doing because nobody else is going to do it for you. There's not another Jacob that comes in at 6 o'clock that works the overnight shift, you know, not how it works.
You know, and I've had insomnia for like my entire career. And it's because like, I don't know if it's I'm naturally wired that way or I've just worked so hard that I've trained myself to be that way. But my brain, it's very difficult for my brain to turn off. So I'll be sitting in bed at 3 a.m, just like thinking of ideas and like, blah, blah. And then you get an idea and you're like, shit, I got to go down to the studio. Right? Like spend half an hour, just like get the idea out and then go back to bed or whatever. Like, this has been my life for so long. And by the way, it's not unique to music, whether, because you might have some of your audience that does other things, film or other art
Yeah,
or
100%.
even just finance or this or that. It doesn't matter. Any job you want to do. The you know, in order to achieve at the highest level, you have to sacrifice a lot and you have to work harder than everyone else. And I kind of use this like 95-5% rule. Like 95% of people are going to be content clocking in and clocking out. Then there's that 5% of people who are going to overachieve. And it's probably even smaller than that. It's probably even 1%. When you think of sort of the income, you know, wealth, you always hear about the 1%. Well, I'm not saying all of the 1% got there through hard work, but anybody who didn't come from that and then got there, they had to sacrifice a lot to get there. You know, it's very, very rare to just hit the lottery or just, you know, your first thing is a big success. You really have to grind it out and like make mistakes and get better. And, you know, that's life. So I embrace that. I love that version of life for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I also appreciate the fact they mentioned that it's been 17 years in the sense of like, you didn't go into the music industry, you know, your first year at a Full Sail, be like, all right, I'm going to make a hit right now. I'm going to win a Grammy. Oh, maybe that might've been the mentality in the sense of like, I think a lot of people go in there expecting
mentality.
It. And then you realize, oh shoot, it's going to take a long time. I think, cause you have,
yeah.
I think two nominations and one win, right? In the Grammys.
Well, yeah, two named nominations, but I've worked on, you know, I recorded all of the hook for all of the lights for Kanye. It was actually in a Beyonce songwriting session. The Dream was there and Kanye kind of hijacked the Dream from Beyonce's session and said, hey, I need you to write this hook for me. And then, so, you know, that won a Grammy, but I wasn't named in it. So, you know, whatever. But yeah, as far as like actual nominations and two nominations.
How many years in was that first one?
The first,
I guess, win. The win. Yeah.
Well, that was for Don't Let Me Down that we won that in.
Probably what, 2015, 2016?
17?
Yeah.
The song came out in 2015. And then, or no, the song came out in 2016. And then I think it was the 2017 Grammys.
Yeah. So that's 12 years into the career of grinding, you know, like that being the point. Like, we all expect I think you can't go into the industry not expecting you to be a. You know,
yeah.
Number one artist, because otherwise you'd never have the drive to do it because it'd be just so depressing otherwise.
Yeah.
But you go into that, or number one producer, or Grammy winning producer, whatever the case is, right? But the reality is 99% of the time it takes years and years and years and years of work.
Yeah, I mean, facts.
It's true,
no,
man.
No,
I like talking about that because a lot of people want the things that people have but don't realize what the steps that they took to get there. So I appreciate you talking about the fact that you scrubbed toilets and got food and cleaned walls and picked up their microphone because people don't want to put in that work now.
Yeah, and I'm well aware. And, you know, I look at the internet and there's a huge dialogue in society right now about, like, income inequality and these sorts of things. And granted, there is a part of the wealth gap that is, you know, inherited wealth that then gets like recycled into more inherited wealth and whatever. And like there is that part of the world, but there's a huge amount of people who just bust their ass every single day. Like I didn't come from any of this. I didn't come from a place of enormous opportunity. I mean, you know, granted I did have advantages, you know, I paid for part of my college, but my mom supported me through that, which is an advantage that I have that many people don't. I recognize that. You know, but again, my first year of, well, 3 years of working, I was working over 100 hours a week every single week. So my argument to that is like, okay, cool. If I'm able to do 120 hours a week, that means you can have a full-time job working 40 and still do another 80 or 60 hours interning on the side, which is enough to get you to where you need to go. If you have to limit it to 60 hours a week, like, okay, you'll be okay. You know, I just happened to really, you know, go above and beyond, and honestly, I just never wanted to leave the studio.
Yeah.
But if there's a will, there's a way. And it's like,
yes,
yeah,
exactly.
No, of course it's not easy. Life is hard. Life is not meant to be easy. If it was easy, everyone would be wealthy and everyone would have a Grammy and everyone would have a Nobel Prize or whatever the accolade that you think is what you're looking for. You know, New York Times bestseller, I don't know. Everyone would be that. But the reality is only, you know, the amount of work required to get to that place is it requires an exceptional ability to focus and drive and motivate yourself, and nobody's going to motivate for you. You have to, it's got to be here. You got to do it, it's internal.
100%, man. I couldn't agree more. I would love to segue into, like I said, I'm a musician myself. I make my own music. So when I saw that you have your plug-in line, I was like, this is pretty sick. I was just super curious about that. Can you talk about them? I'd love to just hear your perspective, and then I can ask some questions about them.
Yeah, sure. So the thought process in entering that is that, again, like I said earlier in the interview, is I've always been about setting goals, achieving goals, and then setting new goals. Also, I think I'm a fairly intelligent person. So one observation I made is that the best music, and especially in the world that I work, which is really the pop world, I work across genres, but ultimately everything is like modern contemporary music. The one consistent thing over the decades of the music industry that we can study is that youthfulness drives the culture. Meaning, the not to say that a 30 or 40 or 50 year old can't make a hit record. Of course, there are the outliers. Dr. Luke's a great example. Like, he's consistently been able to make hits. He's just very good at what he does. But the culture is not driven by Dr. Luke. The culture is driven by the new 23-year-old producer who's just doing something different than everyone else, right? And music culture shifts over time, but it's like the young artists, the young songwriters, the young producers, those are the people who are eventually going to be the next Dr. Luke. And they're the ones who kind of push music forward. So I say that to say, in my, mid-30s, I'm looking at my career and saying, one day I'm not going to get that call anymore. And do I want to be the old guy who's just grasping to maintain that thing of being able to work on the hottest music and the coolest stuff, or do I want to sort of transition into another area? And it wasn't about transitioning even. It was about like managing both. And anytime I take on a new business, I always ask myself two questions. And now I ask myself three questions, but at the time I asked myself two questions. Does this new business support my existing role and brand as a creator, as a producer, as an engineer, as a mixer or songwriter? And does my existing career as a creator, a producer, contribute and add value to this new business? If it doesn't, I probably shouldn't be wasting my time doing it because I only have so much bandwidth. And so I got to make sure that these things are complementary of one another. And I thought, I
What's the
love
third question now, though? What are you asking yourself
the
now?
question is my manager, Neil Jacobson, had me read a book earlier this year. I had a meeting with him and I was telling him all the things that I do. As you can tell, I do a lot of different things. He was like, I want you to read this book and then come back to me. And it was called Essentialism. And what's the author? I have it over there. It's someone Keown. Is it, where is it? Greg McKeown. Yeah, Greg McKeown, Essentialism. It's actually a fantastic book. So I recommend it. He said, read the book and come back to me. And I read it. And essentially the thesis of the book is, okay, you could do a lot of different things. But what is the absolute most important thing? You have to be highly selective over the choices you make. Otherwise, you will find yourself spread too thin and, this jack of all trades mentality. You're not going to be able to contribute enough to any one thing to take it to where it needs to go, right? And we know what that is. When I was solely focused on music, that's 80 hours, 100 hours, 120 hours a week of just dedication. But it's the same with anything. If you want to be a, manufacturer outdoor furniture, right? You're gonna probably spend, if you want to be the best, you're gonna spend extra time learning design and manufacturing and getting your prices down and, like hustling that game. And so that's the third question is it, even if the answer to the first two is yes, the third one is, but is it the most important thing I can be doing? So either way, anyways, going back to the plugins, it seemed like a logical choice. And I'm also a tech nerd, so if I didn't work in music, I'd certainly work in entrepreneurship and tech in some way, probably be a tech founder, build an app, build a software business, whatever. And so I finally found a way to sort of merge those two loves, and I just kind of went at it alone and did a ton of research and made a ton of mistakes, spent a lot of money, funded the whole thing myself, and now I think I've sort of hit my stride and sort of figured out how to do it. And we're continuing to build it slowly. I mean, I still have to juggle both, so I don't get to put 100% of my time into it the way that someone else might. But I have great mentors like Stephen Slade and other guys, and they've sort of given me great advice along the way and been incredibly supportive of me. So yeah, it's something I'm excited about, and I think I have a ton of ideas on cool things that I build, and so I
No,
like just
it's
doing
super
stuff.
cool. And one thing you said, like, music is driven typically by the youth, or creativity is typically driven by the youth. Culture, you said, actually, is driven by the youth, right? And you said that how you didn't want to be that old fart that's still, grasping at trying to get these, to work with. And it's kind of interesting because, like, in developing these plugins, they can outlive you. You create these quality plugins, and to some degree, your name is still attached to them. It's almost like the CLA plugins. Everybody, a lot of people like use Chris Lord-Alge's plugins,
Most
and like.
people don't know him as a mixer. Most people know him for his plugins. You ask any kid right now, they have no idea what he's done musically. They know about the plugins. And
Exactly.
so, but that's just life,
Well, exactly. But yeah, I mean, the guy's also got 25 years on you, so to some degree, like, where, it's an interesting conversation. But yeah, I think that's brilliant, man, and it's cool. It's a very cool segue, while also kind of merging the two areas of your career as well.
Absolutely.
Absolutely, man. I want to be respectful of your time, so I want to ask a couple more questions for you. But I'd love to hear your process on how do you, at your stage of career now versus at the beginning of your career, how do you connect with new artists? Like, you're like, oh, I really, really love to work with this artist. Like, how do you facilitate that in both aspects, where like you don't have much of a repertoire, I guess you could say, to now where obviously you do.
I mean, it happens in so many different ways. Sometimes it's a producer friend or an engineer friend introduces me to somebody. Like, hey, this person can actually help you with this. Like, you should meet that person. So sometimes it's discovery through that. Other times it's like, just the other day I was on TikTok, and I don't spend a lot of time on TikTok, but like I had some producer friends who were a little younger than me who were over, and they pulled up TikTok, and we landed on this video, and it was this guy. You guys should look him up. He's actually sick. What's his Instagram is The Philharmonic, but with a K instead of a C. His name's Christian. Incredible. So talented. And I was like, man, this dude is really dope. I want to work with him. I just, not about money, not about anything like that. I think he makes great music, and I'd love to be able to contribute. And so I just DM'd him on Instagram, like, hey, I think you're dope. I'd love to connect. He's like, I'd love to connect. So I set up a Zoom the next day, and we just had a chat and got to know one another. And now we're gonna, dip our toes in and see if there's something to do. I mean, it doesn't mean it's gonna work out. It just means that, we're both interested in exploring, dating, if you will. And so, because music is a fickle thing, like. You can have two talented people in a room who have zero creative chemistry together.
Very
So,
interesting.
and you can have somebody who's like moderately talented in with somebody else who is moderately talented, but their chemistry just works so well together. It's like the 1 + 1 = 3 scenario, right? They just make each other better. And so, I always am of the view, if I'm going to work with somebody, I want to, especially if it's like I'm not being hired, it's just somebody I want to work with. Like, I want to just take the time to just vibe out and make music and just see if it's a fit. And if it's not a fit, I'm at a point in my life where I'm not interested in trying to fit a, square peg in a round hole or whatever the saying goes. It's really got to be easy. I want to be comfortable. I want to just work with people who want to work with me and give me my creative freedom, but also I understand I need to give them their creative freedom, and we can just kind of work well together. That's what I care about now at this point.
Absolutely. And I want to piggyback on what you said. and it's like almost like a subtopic where reminding artists and producers and anybody in any career, actually, you know, it could be a videographer, to post your content, because the only reason you're working with the Philharmonic or Christian is because he had posted his content and you had seen it. So like, people are like so hesitant to post their content and post their stuff out there that, but it creates opportunities. You know, it might be, who knows? I don't know his page yet, but like, I don't know if that was his fifth post or his 500th post, but like the consistency.
Well, it seems like he's been doing it for a while, and just like he's had a couple little looks and just, you know, just waiting for that next thing. It's like, if I can help somebody sort of achieve their potential, I love that. And I don't know if I can, you know, and I don't know if I will. I just saying, like, he's somebody recently who I just saw, and I was like, he's dope. He's got something. So,
You know,
yeah.
What is one thing that you typically see? I love asking people this because everybody kind of gives a different answer. And there's no answer. That's kind of like why I like asking it. But you've worked on a lot of tracks that have had some serious success. In working through them, what is one thing that you typically find? A lot of massive songs, hit songs, whatever you want to define it as. Is there a consistent trait within those songs or artists?
That's a tough question. Music is such a subjective thing. Mm-hmm. And especially now, the way that music is surfaced to a lot of us is through like algorithms and TikTok and these types of things. And so, you know, I would imagine those algorithms are rewarding certain specific things. But prior to that, I mean, for me, like, I don't know if there's,
I acknowledge the fact that there is no answer.
But I do think that great songs are generally, I was going to say, generally speaking, like, simplistic. They get the message across right away. It's catchy. It's the beat works, the vocals work, everything just kind of blends together. But then you can have a song like All of the Lights, which is like, you know, I done the songwriting session with Dream, who wrote the hook. And it's like an incredibly complex song. Has like 20 vocalists on it. It's like all over the place with like highs and lows and musicality and drums. And then there's this like, you know, there's an orchestral intro and an orchestral like weird outro, and Cuddy's on it and Elton John's on it and Fergie's on it and Alicia Keys on it, Rihanna's on it. And you're like, it's a super complex song, but it's a smash. So I don't know. I don't think there's an answer. I just think it's like, you got to just tap into that thing. You're tapping into what's happening in culture, or a little ahead of what's happening in culture, and you know, it's just got to sound dope, and what sounds dope is different today than what it was 5 years ago and different from what it was 10 years ago. So it's also like, you know, you can have a great song in your arsenal that isn't, it's 5 years away from being ready for people to hear. And so like, I think a lot of hit records is about timing, timing the market perfectly. And you know, I don't know if it's a science. I don't think there's a science to that. I think it's a lot. Some of it's just, I mean, it's great songwriting, great production, great performance, but also just
luck.
You know, great alignment and a little 100%. Bit of luck.
100%, man. Well, I totally appreciate you taking the time, man. I like asking everybody as their final question, what is one thing that you currently know now in your career that you wish you knew when you first started out?
I mean, I've learned so much, and I've made it a point. This is one thing we didn't touch on, but for the vast majority of my career, really up until like a couple of years ago, I never had a manager. I did have a few managers that would last like 3-4 months, and I'd be like, I'm working way harder than you. I don't need you. And I would just fire them.
Very interesting.
So but in the beginning stage of my career, I certainly didn't have a manager for, say, the first 5-6 years. And that forced me to learn all aspects of the music business, not just how to create music, but how to read a contract and how to manage a negotiation. And I failed this a million times, but how to communicate with people. Oh, I learned that the hard way. And so there's a million things that I know now that I didn't know then. You know, I think the biggest piece of advice I can offer is, being a creative is one thing, but running a business is a different thing. And so if you want to work in the music business and you want to find success and you want to, you know, you want to be on that stage and have all the accolades and all that stuff, take the time to really learn the business of music. Learn how to read a contract. So what I did is I would, first of all, lawyers in music, they generally charge 5%, right? I value myself more than that. I'm like, you're reading a short contract that a label sends and you want 5%, whether I mix one song that's worth, you know, a few thousand dollars, whatever, or I mix a whole album or produce a whole album that might be hundreds of thousands of dollars. You're getting 5% for the exact same contract just because the dollar amount is different. That doesn't work for me. So what I did, and by the way, most creatives, they do that. They get their lawyer, pay their 5%, and that's it. But when you have a lawyer that's 5% and a business manager that's 5% and a manager that's 20%, you might, if you're an artist, you have a touring, an agent who's taking 10%. I mean, half your money's gone before, and then the IRS takes their piece. Half, like all, everything's gone before you can touch anything. You have to make so much more than you think. So when that big contract comes in, you're like, and then you start doing the math, you're like, oh shoot, it's actually 70% lower than what I think it is. So I was very good with numbers in this way. And so I said, all right, here's what I'm going to do. I have one, you know, I'm going to hire a lawyer. I'm not going to tell them what the contract is worth. I'm going to say, hey, I have a production deal I need you to look at. What will you charge me for it? And I, you know, they would always do this 5% thing and say, no, like a la carte, like what will you charge? I don't need, that's not me. I don't do that. So I just need you to look and read the contract. Give me a price, just give me a number. And they give me a number. I'd say, great, locked in. Then I'd send the contract and be way more than what it was. They'd be like, oh, if I knew it was for this, I would have blah, blah, blah. I was like, yeah, well, you said it. So then I would learn, they would, so I would read the original contract and then I would read their red lines and I'd study all the red lines. And I'd learn the language. What are the things they're crossing out? What are the things they're changing? What are the things they're doing? And I'd make sure I'm copied on all emails so I would see where their lawyers would push back in the negotiation. I would study all of this. So now I can read my own contracts. And don't get me wrong, I use attorneys when it's important enough to do, but when it's something small and it's not worth it, I can read it myself and I'm confident that I can get the contract over the finish line in just as good a way as the attorney will. So, you know, that I digress, but the point I'm trying to make is if I can offer any piece of advice, it's like, take the time to learn everything,
100%.
You know, learn the negotiations, learn the contracts, you know, study who are the A&Rs, maintain those relationships, do all the legwork. And it requires way more effort, but the end result means you're going to be a beast
100%.
And you're going to learn so much and you're going to, and through that, you're going to discover opportunities that you would have never discovered.
Absolutely.
Like, oh, the songwriter, I understand publishing. Let me, you know, this person's great and we can make great music together and we do and we can find success. Let me sign this person, you know, let's do a publishing deal. You know, it creates new opportunity just by having the knowledge. Now, when I go through life, when I can spot an opportunity, and I think a lot of artists or creatives or whatnot, they're unable to spot the opportunities that are right in front of their faces. And I know this because it happens all the time. I'll be with friends or we'll be talking about stuff and they'll say something and then I'll have this immediate idea like, wait, well, why don't you do this, 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 and structure it this way and do it like that? And they're like, their jaws drop. And they're like, I never thought of it that way. It's because they never thought about it at all. So yeah, just take the time to learn every aspect of it. And then like, and then you'll be a beast. Nobody can mess with you. Nobody, you know, you're always going to have, you know, enough around you you know, the opportunities will never end.
So I think that that is absolutely phenomenal advice that I think that most people don't talk about. I think everybody's trying to hire as people as fast as they can so that they don't have to do the tedious work. But to some degree, it's that tedious work is a blessing in disguise because it teaches you all those things that you would have never known had you not had to do them yourself.
Right.
Or you, like you even said, like you want to do them yourself as something because you want to learn all these opportunities. And I think that that is a phenomenal, phenomenal. Before you even hire people, be dangerous enough to be, you know, do the topic on yourself by yourself. I think it's phenomenal, phenomenal advice. That's great. I managed to shoot on that last one. I was like, I'm taking notes on that. That's a great advice.
Clip that. Really, throw that on TikTok.
Bro, this whole interview is clipped up. 100%. You know that. Well, I really appreciate your time. If you could take two more seconds, I just want to thank every single person that watched this video. And made it to the end of this video. You guys are the true ones for making it to the end of this. Whether you watch it, you know, on YouTube or Spotify, or however you listen to it or watch this video, I appreciate every single one of you. Definitely go check out all the stuff that DJ Swivel is up to. I mean, I'm sure you've heard a lot of the stuff he's worked on, but all his links and everything will be down in the description below, so you can check that out as well. Thank you so much for watching. Best way to support this channel is checking out my own original music. I'll see you guys in the next video. Have a great day. God bless and peace out.
Peace.